Michael Jordan. I teach literature and composition at Hillsdale College, and I'll be chairing this panel on What Does the South Have to Teach Us? In a few minutes, I'll introduce the panelists, Ted Smith and Mark Winchell. But first, let me say a few words to set the stage. What does the South have to teach us? In the 19th and 20th centuries, a host of progressive planners and reformers repeatedly urged the American South to join the rest of America in the march of progress and national consolidation. I won't talk about the biggest urge back in 1861. I'd like to focus on the urges after the war for Southern independence. After the war, the urges continued, often coming from Southerners themselves. Let me briefly cite a few instances. Early in the 1880s, New South advocate Walter Hines Page told Southerners that if they wished to bring progressive education, science, industry, and economic prosperity to the South, they must bury, permanently bury, the ghost of the Confederate dead, the ghost of religious orthodoxy, and the ghost of Negro domination. According to Page, the dead hand of the past was holding the South back, keeping the blessings of progress from the region. In his commencement address at the State Normal School in Athens, Georgia, in 1901, Page asked his audience to recite in unison what amounted to a new religious creed. The more men we train, the more wealth everyone may create. I believe in the perpetual regeneration of society, in the immortality of democracy, and in growth everlasting. In his famous 1886 New South speech, Henry Grady repudiated the Southern past as well, declaring that education, science, and industrialism would be the salvation of the New South. As Lewis P. Simpson has observed, New South advocates like Grady believed in a new sacred trinity, education, science, and industrialism. Salvation will come from this secular God, not from a gracious, loving, and righteous Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Many Southerners in those days heeded the siren's call for pleasure, profit, novelty, and efficiency. Southern agrarian Donald Davidson complained that the materialistic spirit of the New South persuaded some Southerners to use as their mirror of well-being the front page of the newspaper or the society page or the stock market quotations. What Mark Twain said of two drummer scoundrels in Life on the Mississippi illustrates the New South mammon worship: the dollar their God, how to get it their religion. Though many Southerners ignored their past and embraced the New South gospel of profit and progress, some took a stand against progressivism. The Southern agrarians are the most famous 20th century opponents of American progressivism and defenders of traditional Southern customs, ideas, and values. Alan Tate helped the fledgling agrarians to put calls for progressivism in perspective in one of his 1927 letters to Donald Davidson, 3 years before the agrarians published I'll Take My Stand. This is Tate to Davidson. I think the test of the true Southern spirit would be something like this. Whenever the demagogues cry, let's go forward, if the reply is, no, we'll stay where we are, then you may be sure that the reply indicates the right values. When the demagogues urge us to go forward, to join the march of progress, Tate insists that the true Southerner will stay where he is or even look backward. The agrarians were not the only 20th century Southerners to resist progress and national consolidation. They influenced others: Richard Weaver, Emmy Bradford, and Flannery O'Connor, to name only three of many. Flannery O'Connor speaks for true Southern folk in comments she made in 1957 about changes in her region. Speaking for herself and other Southern writers, she said, "The anguish that most of us have observed for some time now has been caused not by the fact that the South is alienated from the rest of the country, but by the fact that it is not alienated enough, that every day we are getting more and more like the rest of the country, that we are being forced out not only of our many sins, but of our few virtues. She also said it was difficult to reconcile the South's instinct to preserve her identity with her equal instinct to fall eager victim to every poisonous breath from Hollywood or Madison Avenue. The New South's continuing attack on old Southern ways has at least two common themes: admonitions to forget the past and to put money in thy purse. Some change the tune a bit, saying, remember the injustice of slavery and put money in our purse by supporting affirmative action and reparations. While many Southerners oppose Leviathan's liberal social engineering, they are nevertheless the new provincials Allen Tate identified over 50 years ago. They have lost their origins in the past and its continuity into the present and begin every day as if there had been no yesterday. Increasingly, all of life seems to be measured by economic and materialistic yardsticks, for the South no less than for other regions of the United States. To quote Allen Tate once again, all are born Yankees of the race of men, and this, too, now the country of the damned. In contrast to the true Southern spirit, a Yankee of the race of men will sacrifice his loyalty to family, to kin, to place, to community, to heritage. He will even sacrifice his birthright and his piety toward God and the creation, all for a mess of progress. But is the true Southern spirit dead? Is the true Southern spirit of resistance to progress and national consolidation, and now global consolidation, is it a lost cause, just as lost as the war for Southern independence 140 years ago? What does the South have to teach us? It teaches us the wisdom and the hope that T.S. Eliot expresses so well in his choruses for the Rock and in his essays. There are no lost causes because there are no gained causes. Let me quote Eliot on this point. If we take the widest and wisest view of a cause, there is no such thing as a lost cause because there is no such thing as a gained cause. We fight for lost causes because we know that our defeat and dismay may be the preface to our successor's victory, though that victory itself will be temporary. We fight rather to keep something alive than in the expectation that anything will triumph. Leviathan is a mighty enemy. Cultural amnesia and mammon worship are mighty enemies as well. The world, the flesh, and the devil are not new temptations, though they may dress up in a different fashion today than in years past. The conflict between the Old South and the New South is still with us. The Southern tradition is still at bay. We may hope that some of our past is decently buried, the ghost of Negro domination, for instance. But we should not forget the past, beginning every day as if there had been no yesterday. We should not bury religious orthodoxy and the morality that goes with it. With Stark Young and the agrarians, we should defend certain qualities, not because they belong to the South, but because the South belongs to them. The true Southern spirit will not embrace the religion of progress and the philosophy of materialism. It will find its identity in something more substantial, in a heroic and tragic past, in spiritual convictions appropriate for this life and for eternity. With these remarks as preface, let's turn to our panelists. I expect we'll be hearing a bit more about the true Southern spirit and perhaps a bit more about Yankees of the race of men. Our first speaker is Ted Smith. Ted Smith received his PhD in communication from Michigan State University. Since 1987, he has been teaching in Virginia Commonwealth University's School of Mass Communications. He has commented on journalism and public policy in numerous broadcast talks for CBS, NBC, CNN, C-SPAN, NPR, and other news programs. He has also published widely in trade journals and in major newspapers and magazines such as the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Times, and Harper's. His major recent publications include two edited works on Richard Weaver, steps towards restoration, the consequences of Richard Weaver's ideas, and In Defense of Tradition, collected shorter writings of Richard M. Weaver. These fine books are published by ISI and by Liberty Press. Many of us are eagerly awaiting his biography of Richard Weaver to be published next year by the University of Missouri Press. Mr. Smith?